Hospital and Judiciary come to order. Today is Wednesday, February 18th, 2015. And what we're going to do today is we have a brief bit of business to introduce a bill, and then we'll have the hearing on the other two bills. And what I think I'll do is open both of them at the same time, so if you're signed up on both bills, when you come up, you only need to come up once. But we'll go through the list. We have the sign-up list. So, okay, where do you go here? I'll open a work session.
Chair Barker, I move LC 3252, dated February 10, 2015, to be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Williamson moves to introduce LC 3252 as a committee measure. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Next, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2596 and 2356.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2356 comes to this committee from the House Interim Judiciary Committee. The bill increases the penalty for the invasion of privacy statute and adds the offense to the list of sex crimes. House Bill 2596 comes to this committee from Representative Buckley and Representative Olson. The bill has two separate sections. Section 1 expands the invasion of privacy statute to prohibit the non-consensual recording of a person's intimate areas, regardless of whether that person is nude or in a public place. Section 2 creates a new crime, the unlawful dissemination of an intimate image. This new crime would prohibit the non-consensual disclosure of a person's intimate picture to a website when there is a specific intent to harass, humiliate, or injure that person. Neither bill is ready to move. We're still waiting on amendments and fiscals.
Okay, thank you. Representative Buckley, could you come up, please? I know you have other meetings you need to get to.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County and the legislature. I appreciate your time and consideration for this bill that Representative Olson and I are bringing forward. As I could tell just by the facial expressions as the description was being read of the bill, who would have thought that we'd be actually having this as an issue come before the Oregon legislature to have to resolve this, the idea of upskirting and the impact that would have? The bill was originally brought forward by a teacher in Albany who's here today to testify on the bill and the impact that it's had on her. I'm very pleased to be able to bring it forward with Representative Olson, and I appreciate your time and consideration of the bill. And as your counsel noted, we are working on an amendment with DOJ to make sure that we have the language right, and that amendment will be coming to you as soon as possible. So thank you for your time and consideration of the bill, Chair.
Thank you for introducing the bill, Representative. Yes. Appreciate that. Any questions of Representative Buckley? Representative
Olson? No, but I actually, just a comment, Mr. Chair. I really do appreciate Representative Buckley bringing this forward too and jumping on board with him on it. It is amazing. Yes. If you jump on or just Google and see what's going on around the nation with this whole issue. Actually, both the issues of both these bills that we're going to hear today and how closely they do tie in. Right now, Wisconsin is working really hard on doing a bill that addresses down blousing and upskirting. It's incredible. So the timeliness of this right now for us here, I would love to be able to set a great role model bill here out of this state that the rest of the states in the country, and if not even Congress, could take a look at and say, hey, we got a problem, we got to do something about it.
And we're hoping the amendments will fix any technical issues. There's an issue of free speech we need. Correct. To be sure we have taken care of. So thank you again, Representative.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. I'd call Denise Boyles, Ashley Buckley, and Kathy McInnes, please. And you guys can choose it, speaking in order, but please remember to identify yourself for the record.
All right, I'm going to go first. Chair Barker, members of the Judiciary Committee, I'm Denise Bowles. I am the original sponsor of this bill, and these are the ladies that came and talked to me while I was serving as state representative of House District 19. Now I'm currently a citizen advocate from Salem, and I'm happy to be here. House Bill 2356 was drafted due to the courage of Ashley and her mother, Kathy, who have taken a difficult circumstance and responded by wanting to change things for future victims. They join me on this panel. They'll share more detail, their story. But quickly, this past fall, Ashley's stepfather was charged with burglary, stalking, and invasion of privacy in both Marion and Bend counties. There were seven victims in his case. He left a hidden camera in the bathrooms and bedrooms of these women, stored the images on a thumb drive. He's spending nearly 4 years in prison, but not because of the images and the videotaping, but because he had 3 counts of burglary. There are 14 counts of invasion of privacy, just in Ashley's case, not to mention the other 6 victims involved. There are other recent cases in Happy Valley, Albany, most recently in Beaverton. The folks in Beaverton will be sharing their story later here this afternoon. Currently in Oregon, a conviction of invasion of personal privacy, regardless of the age of the victim, is a misdemeanor. You could be 12, they could be videotaping you for 10 years until you're 22, it's a misdemeanor. I introduced this bill in order to move Oregon's laws forward to keep up with the rapidly developing technology. I started this process with Ashley and her mother, Kathy, her friends, and her roommates. But since then, I've been contacted from people around the state thanking me for introducing this legislation and advocating its passage. I have heard from victims, family members, and private citizens who are outraged at the state of our laws and urging this classification change. People that intentionally place hidden videos in bedrooms and bathrooms and capture those images forever should be charged appropriately. House Bill 2356 would make the invasion of privacy a Class C felony, up to 5 years in prison and a $125,000 fine. If the person has a prior conviction of one of several specifically defined crimes or if the victim is a minor. To that end, I also support the dash ones. I don't know how you're handling that today, but the first count would be considered a misdemeanor and subsequent counts would be a felony. Changing the classification of a crime is significant. It should be. We are a nation of both justice and mercy. This should be evident in our criminal justice system. This crime needs to be reclassified. The predatory nature, the sexual distinctions, the potential image longevity of these of the images should be reflective in its classification. I don't believe the current classification of a misdemeanor, regardless of the victim's age or circumstances, provides the appropriate accountability for the offender or justice for the victim. With increasing technology, Oregon's current statute is inadequate to address this crime. Once captured, these images have the potential to be in cyberspace forever. The victim's privacy was not simply compromised in a place that they should feel the safest, their bedroom, their bathroom, but also can continue to be compromised in the future. I urge your support for House Bill 2356. Oregon can do better. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for your hard work in getting this introduced.
You're welcome.
We really appreciate that.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Ashley Buckle and I live in Kaiser, Oregon. I'm here today representing House Bill 2356 regarding invasion of personal privacy. I was victimized by my stepfather, Brian Tilley. Below is a statement I read at his sentencing and I would like to submit as my testimony. Though it was nearly impossible to put into words the pain and fear I experienced while being stalked by Brian, not to mention the ongoing list of crimes he committed, here's a brief description. During my senior year of college, I was stalked over the internet, not knowing who my stalker was. My Facebook, my Twitter, my Instagram, email, cell phone, and computer were all compromised and were used by my stalker to post threatening and unwanted pictures and statements without my consent. Once we found out that my stepfather was a stalker, we discovered several videos from hidden cameras in my Corvallis home, Kaiser home, and other victims' homes as well. These hidden cameras were placed in our bedrooms and bathrooms without us victims knowing. Additionally, this is what I read at my stepfather's sentencing. When I heard I had the opportunity to tell you how I feel, I didn't know where to start. You have caused so much pain in my life over the past 14 months. There is no way I could explain all the pain and suffering you've caused me. I confided in you and you convinced me your intentions were to help me protect and identify my stalker. You checked in on me daily to make sure I was doing well and helped me file police reports. You made me feel safe, protected, and reassured. When the person I found out who had been stalking me, instead of relief, I learned that the past 15 years of my life was a lie. The man I called my father was solely responsible for terrorizing me. You witnessed me be fearful for my safety, yet you continued to stalk and harass me. Not only did you stalk and harass me through my social media, you also tracked me and my every move through my GPS. on my cell phone. You continually controlled my life by threatening me and punishing me with embarrassing pictures on my social media. You gained complete power of my life by shutting my phone off numerous times so I could not get in contact with anyone. You instilled fear in my best friends, my family, and my community. You would blame me every time something went wrong, and would tell me I was tearing this family apart. You were so good at lying and thought you would never get caught. I was afraid to open up my door every day. No one should be able to be afraid to open up their door every day to start their day. I should have never had to feel that way. No one should ever have to go through this. You destroyed so many of my friendships and tried to convince me everyone was an awful person. Not only did you stalk me, but you placed hidden cameras in my bedroom and bathroom, in my home in Kaiser, and in my apartment in Corvallis. The fact that you think you had the right to watch me in my bedroom and bathroom proves what kind of person you truly are. No father should want to watch their daughter get undressed and shower. Not only did you think you had the right to my privacy, but you also filmed other women. You have no right to watch other people in their bedrooms and bathrooms. You may have caused me, my friends, my family, and my community pain, but I'm the one who gets to walk free today. I've had such an amazing support system, and because of this, I'm stronger. I'm now in the process to try to change laws so people like you can't victimize others without a serious punishment. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, for your record, my name is Kathy McGinnis. I reside at 890 Cater Court, Kaiser, Oregon. I'm Ashley Buckle's mother, but I'm also here to support and represent her and other women and children in the state of Oregon. Our current system lacks justice and accountability to these predators that commit invasion of personal privacy. Currently in the state of Oregon, the law allows someone to enter your home, place a camera in the privacy of your own bedroom and bathroom, retrieve the camera, view and use the video as often as they like and for whatever purpose they wish. These videos are now forever in cyberspace for anyone to view. We were shocked to be told that in the state of Oregon, these crimes are only considered a misdemeanor, and perpetrators do not have to register as a sex offender after committing these crimes, including minors. It's nearly impossible to put into words the pain, fear, and devastation that my family, friends, and myself have suffered. We are not only victims of this crime, we are also victims of the lack of enforcement due to current Oregon laws. We feel strongly that Oregon laws must be changed. Invasion of personal privacy needs to be a felony, and that the perpetrator should have to register as a sex offender. Let's work together to pass House Bill 2356. Let's respect and support our Oregonians. We would like to thank you for the opportunity to meet, and if you have any further questions, happy to answer those. And I'd like to thank you for your time and consideration on this important piece of legislation.
Committee, are there any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony, and we really appreciate you bringing this forward. As difficult as it is, I'm sure it's very difficult, and you've been through very difficult things, so we really appreciate you making the effort to come down. Thank you again.
Thanks, Chair.
Next, I call Lori Wimmer and Dana Lovejoy and Aaron Knott, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing 42,000 members of the Oregon Education Association who are school teachers, classified staff, and community college faculty and staff in Oregon. And we're here, it's my honor to testify on their behalf in favor of House Bill 2596, which we requested to close a gap in our laws pertaining to invasion of privacy. What you'll hear from one of our great teachers here today is that a phenomenon exists called upskirting, involving the surreptitious recording of images of people's intimate areas using flip phones, typically, and then circulating and sharing these stolen images on social media. This humiliating and invasive behavior is a thing out there. Apparently, some have competitions to see who is able to capture the most photos and videos and post them on the internet. Such behavior is devastating, but as you will see in the newspaper ad, which I concluded with my testimony on OLIS, it's not illegal conduct in Oregon if the unsuspected victim is wearing underwear. That's because the images taken are not specifically nude photos. This parsing defies logic. The injustice of having no remedy for a creepy invasion of privacy is something you can remedy. And that's why we're asking you to enact legislation to make both the act of capturing the image and of circulating it a crime. It's important to note that not just our members have been victimized by upskirting and other similar behaviors. Our students are also at risk. This bill has been crafted to protect anyone, anywhere, from such intentional conduct. Now, to tell you about her experience is Albany teacher Dana Lovejoy, whose courage in coming forward truly inspires me. Thank you for considering our request for passage of this bill.
Please take your time. I understand.
Okay. Chair Barker, members of the committee.
Take your time, Dana.
My name is Dana Lovejoy, and I teach at Kalapuya Middle School in Albany, Oregon. Thank you. I am here today to support House Bill 2596 because I have been directly affected by the form of sexual abuse that I hope it will prevent. I would like to share with this committee my experience as it occurred in my own classroom last year. On May 22, 2014, I was approached by a very brave young lady suggesting that I no longer allow the use of cell phones in my classroom. She was the only student with the integrity to come forward. When I asked her for her reasoning, she informed me that a student in a different class had used his cell phone to take a picture under my skirt 4 days earlier and was showing it to other students. Just for your reference, the dress I have on today is what I was wearing. I am here today to ask for your help in stopping this kind of sexual abuse, as Oregon state law does not currently classify this type of behavior as criminal. May 22nd was a Thursday. On Monday of that same week, I was wearing an ankle-length dress. My students sit in groups made up of 3 to 4 individuals occupying 10 tables. With over 30 students in a classroom at one time, space to move through the classroom addressing the various needs of the students is limited. At one point during my fourth period class, I stopped to assist one of my students, leaning forward slightly to do so. I had no reason to believe that my body needed to be protected. Unfortunately, I was wrong. A male student sitting at the table behind me lowered his cell phone until it was almost on the floor and began taking photos under my skirt. Several witnesses who later gave statements verified this. Once he had the pictures, he immediately Snapchatted to other individuals, both in my classroom and in the school district. From there, the picture was resent and shown to other students in the school and the school district utilizing those students' networks. Following my class, one of the recipients was showing the picture to several classmates. This was the catalyst that prompted the brave young lady to come forward. She saw the situation and was bothered by the picture. Over the course of the days that followed, the picture ended up on other social media outlets, such as Instagram. By Thursday, when the investigation in the school began, this picture had been seen by most of the students in my classes. Upon learning what had happened, I felt immediately in shock and violated. Not only was I photographed without my consent, not only was it of my genital area, but the majority of the school I work in had seen it before I was even aware that it existed. Upon hearing this information, I told all my students to take their phones back to their lockers. Very few students protested or asked why, because, as I now know, they knew exactly what had happened. I contacted the office to ensure the incident was under investigation. My principal subsequently informed me where he was with the investigation. Not surprisingly, he couldn't get a confession out of the male perpetrator, and the photo was no longer on his phone. After confirming with me that I had underwear on, the principal went on to say the violation of my person was not criminal due to the fact that I had underwear on and my intimate areas were not completely exposed. And in spite of the fact, there were witnesses who confirmed the young female's story. Without the picture, it was going to be hard to hold the perpetrator accountable. According to current law, no crime was committed because I had underwear on, concealing my intimate areas. According to current law, the criminal intent for this action depends on what the woman is wearing or not wearing under her skirt. The student did not care what I had on underneath my dress. His intent was the same, regardless of whether I was covered or exposed. So the criminal penalty should be the same, regardless of how the woman is dressed. He was taking a picture of my most private area of my body. While it was challenging to focus, I had continued to work through the school day, telling each class that cell phones were no longer allowed in my classroom, even though school policy allowed them. I told them that I had been made aware of being violated and their privilege had been lost. In spite of the violation, I continued to be professional and work with students, even those who I knew were involved. A couple class periods later, the principal entered my classroom again and requested I meet with him after school for an update on his investigation. He informed me that he had called students who were closely involved in for questioning. However, by this point, too much time had elapsed, and the picture was apparently no longer on their phones. The school did find pictures of their phone on their phone of adolescent female classmates and exposed gaps in their shirts and pants as they sat in chairs. A lot of these pictures showed the undergarments of the girls, but they too had no outlet to lodge a complaint since their body was not exposed due to the wearing of undergarments. So let me paraphrase what I just explained. An adolescent male can take inappropriate pictures of an adolescent female's genitalia, unbeknownst to her, post them on social media for others to see, but it's not criminal for him to do so as long as she is wearing undergarments. The principal, the human resources department, or the police could take no action because the incident was not criminal. I continued to suffer through the pain of being violated and to work as a professional to finish out the school year. It has been over 8 months since the incident, and I am still working to recover from the violation that I feel. I now wear dresses and skirts only if I have tights or shorts underneath to protect from potential voyeurs. I still feel overcome with emotion and cry when I share my story. I have instituted a no cell phone policy in my classroom, yet I still find students hiding them while they're in class. I no longer feel safe in my classroom. Unfortunately, this is not an isolated event. Just last week, a student who transferred from another school in Oregon shared that students in his school's class tried to take a picture under his teacher's dress last year also. I tell every teacher I know what happened to me in an effort to protect them from the same thing happening. I am not the first to have the upskirting happen, and the recent stories in the news prove I am not the last. The fact that this action has been given a moniker is evidence that this is taking place too often and with little or no recourse for the victims. Our laws have not kept up with our technology. As a result of this incident, my school district has changed its policies in relation to sexual harassment to address this type of act. However, these changes only affect the women who work in my district. Every individual has the right to reasonably expect that they are protected against inappropriate acts of sexual nature. Please help us protect our teachers and students. They are your daughters, sisters, wives, and mothers. I ask each of you to please support House Bill 2596 so this never happens again. I thank each of you for your time and consideration.
Well, I want to thank you very much for coming down and giving your story. We can see the pain involved, and it is brave of you to do that. The laws have not kept up with technology. And I've talked to teachers in my district, which is the Beaverton School District, about this. And one of the things they're telling me is they can't believe the amount of pornography they see the kids watching in school. And I don't think we should have to have a state law. It would seem to me that especially middle schools would prohibit cell phones in the schools. I'm not sure why people think the kids need to have those in the school during the day, but the school should set that policy. Mm-hmm. But we should set the policy to protect people like you, and that's what we intend.
Well, and our school has tried to set policies around, you know, cell phones because the kids are going to bring them.
Yeah.
But our kids aren't always honest about where those phones are.
Well, they're kids. I mean, they're we all know that they don't make the best judgment, but to have it's old being an old guy, it's just the thought of having all the middle school boys with watching live pornography while they should be doing something else is appalling to me. So yeah. And for their sake, I mean, you know, it's not good. So I hope the schools will take a look at this and review what they're doing there. Mr. Knott, please.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Aaron Knott. I'm the legislative director for the Attorney General in the Oregon Department of Justice, here to provide some context for the legal background of House Bill 2596. As this committee is especially aware, any regulation of anything that touches on free speech done by the legislature is very, very difficult, especially in Oregon. Our free speech protections are among the most, if not the most robust in the country, and that must inform our legislative process. So the good news that I'm here to share is that House Bill 2596 is very, very, very close to being where it needs to be. It'll need a small and, I think, consensus tweak to a little bit of the language, and we will be good to go, and we already have that language ready, so we're not talking about much time. And thank you to Representative Buckley for giving us a heads up and allowing us to get this analysis together. So just to give you a bit of national context, this issue is not an Oregon issue. As you can well imagine, this is everywhere they have phones now, so it's spreading across schools all over the country. And one of the first states that took a stab at state regulation and legislation response to this was Texas. And so Texas ended up being the trial case for this kind of legislation. It was overturned for overbreadth. It was found constitutionally infirm. So in the process of preparing for this hearing, we took a look at Texas, then took a look at Oregon law, and again, are happy to inform you that we believe that we have avoided most of the mistakes that well-intended statute made. Specifically, it's always the overarching prerogative of free speech that if you are out in public, what you show to the public is basically not protected. And that has some bearing here. You can imagine if you're out on the street and something happens that causes you to expose your undergarments, even if it's against your will, you know, anything strong, a wardrobe malfunction, strong wind. It's easy to imagine how these things can happen. That is a different type of activity from a free speech perspective than when somebody slides a cell phone under a desk to take a picture. It has to do with where you are, and it has to do with your reasonable expectations. So, you know, I don't need to take up much of your time except to say I think we have this well in hand, and it'll be a good bill you can pass with confidence. Thank you for your time. Open
any questions? Representative Barton?
Thank you, Mr. First, I just wanted to thank you for coming in. We really appreciate your courage. And Mr. Knott, I just wanted to also ask you, perhaps we can follow up later. I have some questions about how we're going to do that, given the fairly rigid application of Article 1, Section 8. And we can discuss that off the record.
Chair Barker, Representative Barton, I'll stick around after the hearing.
Thank you.
Representative Krieger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last week, Representative Tomei was in, and we were talking about Johnson pimps and the abuse of young women and girls. Now we have this, and you know, this young man here is nearly 80. I'm almost 75, and I don't remember young boys in my generation wanting to do these types of things. You know, if you saw a Playboy magazine, that was something. In those days, they were all covered, and Playboy didn't come into effect until, what, 56, 55, something? I don't know what's happening to our society that this is where we're going, but anything we can do to identify this in such a way that we can, like, you know, curtail it and still protects free speech, I think we need to do it. And I'm very glad, Aaron, that you're part of this. You're a smart guy. You'll help us get the right answer. And young lady, thank you very much for being here.
Just a very brief. I think it would be useful for that discussion that Representative Barton's asking for to be before the committee. I think some explanation about the free speech.
When we get the amendment.
Rather than behind. So, he'll get too smart if he gets all the
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Dana, thank you. You did well. And Lori, thanks for being up there with her. Aaron, question for you, because talking about the overreaching, a question was asked of me earlier today about, and I'm curious your thoughts. I know I didn't give you any prep on this, how this plays out with drones.
Chair Barker, Representative Olson, that is quite a curveball. I don't want to overcommit myself here, but to refer back to some general principles of which I am confident, most of the jurisprudence we have built up around free speech has to do with reasonable expectation of privacy. You'll notice that's the framework that already exists in this statute, and there may be some tweaks necessary for public view. That is one of the debates about drones, because if it's parked outside your bedroom, do you have a reasonable expectation of privacy in your bedroom? And that seems to be the one location on earth that everybody really agrees. Mm-hmm. If you have privacy anywhere, it's there. So I don't want to opine too much about how drones might affect that, but that's a real issue, a smart question, and something I think we're going to be talking about as a group in the future.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's a good answer. Right, Representative Leininger, please.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming forward today, and I want to thank you as the mother of a seventh grade girl and the mother of a 10th grade boy and a debate coach for middle school kids who are trying so hard to focus on things other than their bodies and their, you know, think of themselves as learning, thinking people in the world who aren't just self-conscious all the time, and trying to get at this issue is really important to helping them not be self-conscious. And I want to thank you also for your courage in stepping forward. We tell the students in our debate club that courage is like a muscle, and the more you exercise it, the stronger it gets. And your leadership and the leadership of the other young woman who testified today about her experience, that is the kind of role modeling that we need all of our young people, girls and boys, to see, so that when they see something happening that's wrong, they know that they're in good stead to step up and solve the problem. So thank you.
Representative Post.
Thank you, Chairman Barker. Dana, right. My wife is a 27-year tenured middle school special ed teacher. We've had this discussion, and I wanted to tell you that we've been through this too. And so, I guess my question is not really a question for you, but a question overall. Maybe it'd be for you. It's a school district. I want to take care of this. I want to do the right thing here, but I'm also concerned about school districts. You have free speech. This is probably a dumb question, but free speech in a school, doesn't school districts, can't they have rules? Can't schools individually have rules? Can't the principals individually have rules? Shouldn't there have been some sort of recourse in the school? Is that a legitimate question? Because that's the one that my wife and I keep talking about. The school should have came down immediately.
Chair Barker, Representative Post, I can truly say that exceeds my experience. I have no answer for that question.
I'm kind of passionate about this because of my wife.
I was told that because I had underwear on and there was no crime, there was essentially nothing they could do at any level.
Maybe OEA person.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Post, I know that school districts are working to update their own school policies whenever new things come up. It's harder to do that after the fact of an incident, although I think that in the case of Greater Albany School District, they did add something to their sexual harassment policies. I think good people can disagree about whether or not the remedy that a school district has is sufficient when this is such a gateway kind of bad behavior that one wonders what's to come of some student who is given the message that if it's telegraphed that this is really no big deal. And not only does that make victims feel horrible, but it also makes the perpetrators feel that they didn't do anything wrong. And so by virtue of having something in statute that's a little bit, has a little bit more teeth, I think that we give school districts better tools to also respond on campus. But those are two different boxes.
Thank you. I guess what I'm, and that's, thank you. We, again, my living vicariously through a teacher wife, there are words the kids cannot use. And they're almost petrified to use those words, and rightly so in most cases. But you just made the point. Apparently, they're not petrified of this act. Mm-hmm. How do we get from words to action?
Right.
And I want to do this on a statewide level. I'm with this, but I'm also a little ticked off at school districts. I'm a little upset the school districts aren't protecting our teachers, apparently, and our children.
Our kids.
So thank you very much. And the judge in the case, we have another case in Washington County, had no choice but to rule the way he did, because we have to write the law. The law has to say in English, plain English, what it is. We've not caught up with the times yet, and so certainly I have no criticism of the courts for their decisions. We hope to fix it with this, with the action we'll be taking.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ben. I appreciate that. Appreciate your coming down today. Kim Larson, Tiffany Underwood, and Kelsey Ever, please. You can go in any order, but please remember to identify yourself for the record.
I guess I'll start. Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Tiffany Underwood. I'm a deputy district attorney here in Marion County, and I had the pleasure of being the prosecutor associated with Ashley Buckle and Ms. Evers here. I'm here today to encourage the passage of House Bill 2356. When the Tilley case first came to me, we were perplexed in my office that we were looking at some pretty serious charges, and at least here in Marion County, what we had at the time were only misdemeanors. And so I had to tell a tearful victim and her mother that most likely he was going to get out of jail rather quickly, and that he would hopefully be on some sort of probation, although we couldn't even promise them supervised probation. And that's very hard words to tell somebody who's been deeply affected. As As circumstances happened, Mr. Tilley had also committed some crimes down in Benton County. The Benton County DA's office worked very closely with my office. We were able to come to a pretty good resolution in the Tilley case. But I wanted to let you know that I do have other victims out there. I have victims who are 12 and 13 years old, whose fathers and stepfathers and mom's boyfriend is videotaping them. And in those cases, there aren't going to be any burglary charges because the perpetrator is lawfully there in the house. So we're looking at misdemeanors, even though these are children who are being undressed. My point is that these are crimes that are being committed with a sexual intent. There's really no other reason for secretly videotaping women and children who are in bathrooms and in bedrooms. And yet, invasion of personal privacy is not listed as a sex crime under Oregon law. That has a couple of ramifications that are important. First of all, victims of sex crimes are allowed to prevent public access during court proceedings. And so we tried to enact that in the Tilley case, and the court pointed out to us that because these weren't sex crimes, they had no way of preventing the media from attending the court hearings and videotaping the victims. Another plus side to considering these as sex crimes would that we could then, if they are put on probation, require sex offender conditions of probation. So we could require that they have supervised probation, that they complete a full disclosure polygraph, that they complete maintenance polygraphs, they have a curfew, they get sex offender treatment, so that when people are out in the community, the rest of the community can be safer from actions like this. And finally, that they register as sex offenders. It's important to this community that these individuals are identified and that we are able to, as a community, give them treatment if that's possible in order to make them more productive members of our society. So I'd encourage you to pass House Bill 2356 to hold the offenders accountable for the pain that they inflict on these victims, like the ones you've heard from today. Thank you.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, my name is Kim Larson, and I am here on behalf of the Marion County District Attorney's Office to speak in support of House Bill 2356, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in front of you. I'm the Director of Victim Assistance for the DA's Office, and have worked in the victim services field for more than 20 years, advocating within the criminal justice process for victims. I've watched as crime has evolved over the years with the use and sometimes abuse of technology. I think many of us can probably identify a lot of ways that technology has benefited our lives. It makes communication easier. It helps us do scheduling a lot easier. It helps us keep in touch with family and friends in ways that we've never been able to do before. Unfortunately, side by side with these positive impacts, there are a lot of people who choose to use technology to hurt other people and to invade their privacy, leaving victims feeling vulnerable and unsafe. Throughout the years, I think we've also come to better understand the true impact of violating someone's privacy. Of course, it's much easier to know the impact of a crime when you can see the effects. If there's a physical injury or someone's property is damaged or stolen, it's easy to see what the harm is. It's much harder to wrap our minds around those with less visible injuries. And this law takes a positive step toward reflecting a more complete understanding of that harm. Safety and security is one of our most basic human needs. When someone's privacy is violated in the ways described by this law, it cuts to the core of how a person functions day to day, and for some people, how they function for years to come. They learn to constantly look over their shoulder, trying to guard their safety and their privacy. And this can be a Herculean task when you don't even know where the threat is coming from. Victims of this type of crime often live in survival mode, most of the time, living in constant fear and terror. They come to believe that no place is safe, which leads to hypervigilance that takes an extraordinary toll on their well-being. It's a life-changing event for victims, potentially affecting their relationships, their employment, their education, and a lot of other aspects of their day-to-day life. And because technology makes it so easy to share images, victims are often left to wonder and worry about who else is seeing these images. And we all know how the internet works. Once images are out there, there's no getting them back. And victims live with that knowledge every day as they try to move forward. And we've seen and heard from people today who have that great courage in their lives to be able to move forward and try to make a difference and change the law. But it is something that weighs on their mind. When people's privacy and safety are impacted at this very basic level, it's important that we have an appropriate response from the criminal justice process that recognizes the elevated damage created by these crimes. For these reasons, I support House Bill 2356. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. Please go ahead.
Hi, Chair Barker and the members of the committee. My name is Kelsey Evers, and I'm here to tell you about my personal experience in regards to the law of invasion of personal privacy. My best friend, Ashley Buckle, was stalked and harassed over the internet by her stepfather, Brian. During that time, Brian also secretly filmed her and other victims in several states of undress. These cameras were unknowingly placed in bedrooms and bathrooms of the victims without their consent. Bedrooms and bathrooms are private places where an individual should feel safe and secure, but now that is not the case. For 14 months, I watched my best friend suffer and be fearful for her life. I was fearful for my own life. We were lied to, manipulated, and were tricked into believing the person we thought that we knew was someone that it was not. Our relationships and emotions were torn apart countless times. We did poorly on our tests, we missed classes, and had several sleepless nights. I watched Brian as he comforted Ashley after he terrorized her time and time again. No one should have to live like that. Brian tried to break us apart, humiliate us, manipulate us, and caused us to be inaccurately portrayed as people we are clearly not. After finding these videos, we figured that her stepfather would be in prison for a much longer sentence. However, we were very wrong. It is unbelievable to find out that such a crime is only a misdemeanor in the state of Oregon. With the current law, an individual can enter a home, place a camera in the desired location, film a victim, and retrieve that camera. With that video, they can do as they please. We have no idea where these videos will end up or what they will do with those videos. They could be roaming around the internet for anyone to view. Not to mention, the individual does not have to register as a sex offender if he or she gets caught. Although I was not personally videotaped, I feel very strongly that the law needs to be changed. Brian was extremely close to my family, and I considered him a father-like figure. If a person I trusted and respected so greatly could do something so painful and leave so much fear and devastation in my life, it is clear that this type of crime could happen to anyone. Invasion of personal privacy needs to be changed to a felony, and the perpetrator should be required to register as a sex offender. Although this law will not affect our situation, we feel strongly that it does need to be changed so that others are not left in the same situation that we face today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions of this panel? Thank you very much, panel. Appreciate your testimony. And last we'll call Kathy Reed and I think Madison Reed.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Katie Reed. This is my daughter, Madison, and we live in Portland. We are here in support of House Bill 2356 and to share my family and how we've been personally touched by what this bill represents. What was supposed to be the best year in a teenager's life, senior year in high school, has been consumed with all the details of a criminal case that we are involved in. It centers on our neighbor and what we truly believed for almost 15 years was a good family friend. We actually considered him an extended member of our family. This person wasn't what anyone would consider a creepy neighbor. He had a great family, held a very respectable position in a local company, and was involved with church and his community. But when my daughter Madison was just 13 years old, he started inviting her down to his beach house for the weekend with him and his boys. My husband and I didn't think that was odd because my daughter and his son have been best friends forever. And most importantly, we trusted him. We trusted him to take care of her like she was his own daughter. But instead, he chose to buy a small recording device the size of a car fob to secretly tape her as she dressed from showering. He continued to do this ritual over the course of 4 years. But then, because kids' lives get busier as they get older and she wasn't able to visit the beach with him as often, he decided to start recording her in her own bedroom in Portland, a place where you would expect complete privacy. Luckily, the camera was discovered after only a few months of recording, and this is what ultimately led to his arrest. But the way our laws are currently written, his invasion of privacy charges, which were 7 in all, 5 in Clatsop County and 2 in Washington County, and two burglary charges would have given him a slap on the wrist and chances of any jail time non-existent. It was only because he was gutsy enough to place a camera in our own home was he charged with two counts of burglary. And that is the only reason he potentially may serve 2 years in prison, not because he secretly recorded my daughter for 4.5 years for his personal enjoyment, but because he entered our house with the intent to commit a crime, and that is so wrong. To add insult to injury, he not only doesn't have to register as a sex offender, but when he is released from prison, he'll continue to be our neighbor 4 houses down from us. Our dead-end street requires us to drive by his house every time we leave our street. Going for walks sets us up to pass within feet of him driving by. And with no indication that his family has any intention of moving from the neighborhood, it will probably force us to move, becoming the victim once again. As recording devices become smaller and more advanced, our laws need to keep one step ahead of technology. These people who are delusional in thinking it's okay to secretly tape, record a person's most private moments for their own pleasure, need to be held accountable and need to be deterred from claiming more victims in the future. By passing House Bill 2356, it will punish those who commit these crimes appropriately and hopefully may deter some who are thinking about it but realize what will happen to them when they get caught. I strongly encourage the passing of House Bill 2356. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, go. Okay. Okay. Currently, the invasion of...
Please state your name for the record.
Oh, yeah. Madison Reed.
Thank you.
Okay. Currently, the invasion of privacy charges are considered misdemeanors, and they do not require registering as a sex offender and are given little, if no, jail time. If the person who committed these crimes against me would have done this crime in some other states, he would be serving at least 5 years and would have to register as a sex offender. My neighbor committed a crime against me for 4.5 years. He went into my room without my permission to set up a camera, and that's the only reason he's going to jail, not because he filmed me in his own house. The laws need to be kept current in order to keep up with technology. This type of thing is happening all the time, and the sex offenders are getting a very light sentence. People need to realize that this kind of thing is not okay, and the criminals need to be punished for what they did.
Any questions? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madison, I just wanted to thank you for coming down.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, the word hero is something that's thrown out a lot in politics. We usually use it in the context of military or public safety, and rightly
yeah.
so. But it means more than that. And to me, some of my heroes are people like you who are crime victims and really have the courage to step up and say, this happened to me, it can't happen again.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate it. We all do.
Yeah, thank you.
And once again, you know, we read these stories, people read these stories in the paper, see it in the news, and you kind of forget about it. And the pain, which we've seen today, once again, I'm reminded I was a police officer for 31 years, and I'd see the victims, I dealt with the victims. And it doesn't just end at the end of the newspaper article. I mean, we've seen the pain today, and the continuing thing of having to drive by the neighbor's house. Right. That kind of stuff goes on, and you don't get over it. I mean, and I hope you are able to get the counseling that will show you should be upset about it. I mean, that isn't normal, and it is very destructive to the victims. And so, once again, and thank you very much for coming down and testifying. I know it's not easy, but we really do appreciate you putting human face on these things that otherwise are just a few inches, column inches of newspaper.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
We're not going to move the bills today because they're not ready. If you might have heard, we're going to have some amendments. One of the other amendments we're taking a look at is being sure vulnerable victims are included in the language so that somebody who's mentally challenged or things like that are protected as well under the more stringent rules. We hope to have the amendments and get this straightened out. As you heard from the Department of Justice, from the Attorney General's office, we're working to be sure that we will have a constitutional bill that will pass muster in court. And again, thank you everybody for coming down today. We appreciate it. Is there any further business to come before the committee today? Committee, we stand adjourned. Thank you. Committee, we stand adjourned. Thank you. To come before the committee today.